I suggested to Dr. Bennett that I talk about communicating in an age of conflict and division. And I don't think I have to prove to any of you that this is an age of conflict and division. If you get on social media, if you watch TV news, conflict and division all over the place. And it's not just the big level institutions and all, it goes all the way down, sometimes into our own families, our own interpersonal relationships. I would like to share two things with you about my biases so you can see where I'm coming from. In part. First is that I am a Calvinist. A Calvinist. A Calvinist is a brand of Protestantism that's got different parts of it, but for this lecture I want to say that one aspect of Calvinism is that you think that people are not necessarily inclined to do good. They might be inclined to do evil, to do bad things, to hurt other people, to use language in ways that they shouldn't. Morally, that there is this part of us. Now, you can say we're sinners if you want to put it in terms of theological, biblical language, but the point is that we don't necessarily have in us the desire to use communication for the good of other people and ourselves. Now, the flip side of that in Calvinism is that God is mighty powerful and will make often good things happen in spite of human beings. But the other side, the positive side, is that God is working things out here and there, making good things happen. It's a powerful God. It's a God of grace that saves people, that saves situations, that brings people out of muck and into the light. A God that is unexpected and unpredictable. I have a friend who used to be the head of the KKK for a particular state. He is now co-pastor of an African-American congregation. Hard to explain that. Hard to figure out how that would happen. So for me as a Calvinist, I say things are falling apart left and right all over, and then God is coming in and making things happen. Look out. And often those good things happening seem to be in spite of us. We say, wow, that was great. The other bias, the second bias I have, I'm not only a Calvinist, I'm a localist, a localist. So I tend to think of communication primarily as a local phenomenon, person to person, within groups, within neighborhoods, within organizations. That when the communication is really good at that local level, it bubbles up goodness, and this grace that God brings to us becomes more and more obvious. And when things are really bad at the local level, down to person, life becomes absolutely miserable, such as people going through a divorce or a friendship that suddenly ends, or being fired by someone that you thought really appreciated you. I mean, these are difficult, really difficult things interpersonally, locally. But when we work on those and we make a difference there, it moves out and it becomes of value to other people who weren't part of the initial local development. So in a sense, what I'm saying here is that redemption of our communication tends to happen at the local level, including our relationship with God, and then it moves out. And I am very leery of anybody who thinks they can solve the world's communication problems at some high level by a government program, by a single evangelistic campaign, by a church or whatever. Anything that's top down because people think they have the right process, they have the right equipment, they have the right technology or whatever to fix everything, chances are they're going to make things worse. So those are my two biases, the Calvinist and the localist. Now what I'd like to do is to present three thoughts which I believe are biblical. By that I mean they're Judeo-Christian. They come out of Scripture. That doesn't mean that these thoughts are not available elsewhere, but I derive them out of the Bible. And there are three, if you will, essentials for me about communication. And they directly address this whole issue of communicating in an age of conflict and division. First point, first very, very important point, I guess I'd say it's probably the most important thing to know about communication, human communication, is that we should recognize the life-changing power of words. Recognize the life-changing power of words. From Proverbs 18, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Fruit, flourishing, growth. There is this whole metaphor of growth, of flourishing, of development in human life, in all of our relationships with God, with other people, in our relationships with ourselves, that happens through words. And it seems to echo God's original creation. God speaks the world into existence, power, speaks people into existence, speaks this creation and human beings into power in a way where they can work together and human beings can cultivate the creation and make the good things happen from God's creation that aren't already there. It's kind of the entrepreneurial mandate. And us being created in the image and likeness of God as people with a high level of language is really a remarkable, spectacular thing. But it's the power of life and death. The gift of human communication gives us the ability to create, to maintain, and to destroy relationships. If you take away one thing from here today, take that away. That this life-changing power of words really allows us to create and maintain and also to destroy relationships, all of our relationships. That's power. We often think of communication as just everyday stuff. We're all given the ability, we learn it growing up and on it goes, but in fact there's so much more going on with it. Communication is a gift that equips us to love God and our neighbors as ourselves. You want to love God? You want to love your neighbors? You want to love yourself? Become a better communicator. That's the route to go there. You want to stop loving? You want to start hating? You want to start despising, resenting? Let your communication start falling apart. Let it grab you at a spot in your life where it will make you a problem for God and other people and yourself. And it happens all the time with all of us. The life-changing power of words. I grew up in a very difficult situation with an alcoholic father and a paranoid schizophrenic mother. A lot of conflict. They grew to hate each other. And they became very creative at using language in ways to put each other down. They enjoyed that. In fact, I would say for all of us, there is some deep negative enjoyment of putting other people down. Because when we put other people down, it seems to build us up. We can think more highly of ourselves than other people. True of all of us. So I've had lifelong anxiety and depression, really bad. I've been in therapy and psychiatrist and all for many, many years. Problems, of course, growing up with that. I didn't have the role models. I had bad habits that I learned. I really enjoyed being critical, especially critical of my parents and their lack of raising me. I've got a photo in my office of me standing at my father's grave, forgiving him. And my wife took the picture, and I wrote out what I would say to him today after much of my healing compared to what I would have said in the early days after he died when I was in high school. We all have problems. We all are broken. We're broken people. And that brokenness kind of grabs us, and we tend to use this power of language in negative ways if we're not careful. And much of what we see going on in the world around us now with conflict and division is people who themselves have their own problems, their own damage. And that damage is leading them in ways that is damaging other people and damaging themselves. They're on the wrong road. They're on the wrong track. And to turn their communication around, as I'll talk about in a few minutes, is going to be quite a project. There's a kind of irony here. I'll just call this an irony. It's something that two things that don't seem to fit together, but in fact, they do fit together in the world. We take words less seriously when we use them negatively than when we use them positively. We take language in written form, texts and social media and so forth, more seriously when we're negative and when other people are negative. But when it comes to day-to-day life of trying to be positive, trying to be encouraging, trying to build each other up so we flourish together, we don't take language nearly as seriously. It's an irony, but it's part of us, and I think it's part of our brokenness. I don't follow a lot of people on Facebook. And one of the reasons I don't is that some people that I have really looked up to in my life, became friends with on Facebook, and then I saw them posting things that were very negative about other people and institutions, and I felt to myself, I didn't know that about them. I didn't know they were that way. And suddenly now I'm thinking differently about somebody that I loved and cared about because of something they posted on Facebook. And I wonder to myself, did they take that seriously when they posted that? I don't know. I don't understand it. Let's give each other some space in that. We all have this tendency. The more distant and less local it becomes, like online, the easier it is for us to go negative and to think that we are not going to hurt other people or God or ourselves. One basic principle here behind this life-giving power of words is to hang out with people who are positive. Hang out with people who encourage you. Hang out with people who build you up. And don't hang out with negative people who put you down or put others down or always talk in negative ways about things. Because by the way God made us, we become like the people we spend time with. It's the way it happens. This power of language moves along like a virus, and it infects us. Second point, fill your heart with gratitude. Fill your heart with gratitude. The best antidote or vaccine that I have come up with to encourage people to practice in order to avoid getting into the conflict and the division, the muck, is to fill themselves with gratitude. Gratitude is a kind of virtue that has amazing power. It's not just the original vaccine and one booster and two boosters. It's like Pac-Man in the old video games, going out there and eating everything. Man, it eats negativity away. Just chews it up, spits it out. Gratitude. Gratitude is, wow, what a thing. Fill your hearts with gratitude. Listen to what Jesus says. But the things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart. From the heart, not primarily from the mind, from the heart. The orientation of our hearts, if you will, our affect with an A, A-F-F-E-C-T-I-V-E, our affect. What's going on in our hearts? The feelings that we have. Most of our communication is not logical, rational. We don't think it all through. It comes rather quickly sometimes, spontaneously from our hearts, and it gets us into trouble. But if our hearts are oriented toward gratitude, we're much more likely to first go toward language that builds people up, that encourages them, that gives them courage, encourages them, that gives them a sense of their worth, their value, of your love for them. We all live every day along a heart continuum. On one side of the continuum is gratitude. On the other side is ingratitude, and we're in there somewhere. Our hearts are oriented at any time in here. Sometimes we get very upset and down or discouraged, and we're moving over toward the ingratitude side. Things are going well another time, or we have a great sense of joy about something that happened with friends and family, and we're over towards the gratitude side. We're moving around in here. We all live in there somewhere. What I would like you to think about is paying attention to your own heart to see where you are on that continuum each day, day by day. And especially when you move into a communication situations where there is conflict and division, you might initially be seduced over to the ingratitude side because it makes us want to fire off salvos, be critical, join in. We need practices that will fill our lives with gratitude. For me, my background, my difficulties over the years with anxiety and depression, seeking ways of developing gratitude in my life, filling my heart with it, has been absolutely essential. Absolutely essential. Let me tell you some of the things that I do, but find your own practices that will work for you. Before I get out of bed in the morning, I thank God for another day of life. Every day of life is a gift. I wake up. It's a new day dawning. Wow, what a gift. Some of my friends say to me, you know, I get out of bed right away and I get on my knees. Between that time of waking up and getting on my knees, you know what's going to happen to me? I'm thinking about what I have to do that day. I'm thinking about the chores of the day. I'm thinking about the things I'm worrying about that I have to do that day. Those will come in to me instantly in the morning. But if as soon as I wake up, as habit, I say, God, thank you for another day. You were with me yesterday. You'll be with me today. Make some great things happen beyond what I can reasonably do myself. There's my Calvinism again. Let's do it, God. Let's do it. I have a gratitude board in my home office. And I put things up there that remind me what I'm grateful for. Photos of people. Ticket stubs from events we've been to. I have up there a photo of me at my father's gravesite, forgiving him. To remind me about that. That's a gift. I'm grateful that I got to that point in my life. I have up there also a changing list of things. Periodically, I come up with a list of the latest things I'm grateful for. And I'll take that list and put it up there. And I have the list positioned so when I walk out of my office to go into the world where I know I'm going to get beaten down a little bit and there's going to be conflict and division, I see that on the way out. It's like at the end of worship, and you leave worship and you go into the world. Worship for me has been essential. God has served me in my life in so many ways, made life possible for me, made relationships to flourish for me. I can hardly believe it. And so I look upon worship as not just a teaching. I go in and I'm taught something. But I look upon worship as a way of reorienting me to the reality of life, which is that, yes, it is a fallen world, a broken world, and a lot of hurting people. But God is making good things happen. God has made good things happen. He is making good things happen, and he has promised even better things to happen. And I'm living in that middle ground right now, and I need to be looking around for those good things and giving thanks. For me, worship is an orientation toward gratitude, and I need to be part of a vibrant community that worships God as the gathering of gratitude. I collect notes from former students. They send me texts. They used to send me a lot of written cards about ways that I serve them well as a teacher or as an advisor. And when I get those, I put them in the file. It's my kudos file. And periodically, when I'm starting to get down and my gratitude is waning and I'm saying, oh, to heck with this world, I don't like it, I don't like what's going on, I pull that out and I look through there. And I get amazed. God did that through me. God did this through me. God is making things happen. My what the heck am I doing focusing on myself and woe be me and all the bad things that have happened to me? Doesn't make any sense. A kudos file. I got to tell you about this kudos file. I taught years and years ago at a university that had a thing where every year they would ask graduates of the university from 2 years earlier to send in, this is before email and all, to send in a note about who their favorite professor was and the influence that that professor had on their lives, okay? And I didn't know anything about this. And one day I get a letter from the provost, the top academic officer of the university, saying, we got this note from so-and-so and thought we would pass it along to you. And it was a handwritten note from a former student of mine. The student sat in the back row every class with a baseball cap pulled down over his eyes. I assumed he was sleeping every class. I don't remember he ever participated at all in any discussion in class, but I remembered him well because I'd see him back there every time. And I wasn't gutsy enough at that point in my teaching career to call on somebody who wasn't volunteering it. And it was this most heartwarming thing. And I thought, what is this all about? I think the power of my teaching and the power of my speaking and all comes from myself. Except for those dastardly students sitting in the back half asleep with baseball caps who don't pay attention and want to sneak in looking at their cell phones or whatever. Be gone with them. Whoa! This is an amazing... You see, gratitude all around us. It starts coming out of our pores when we pay attention. There's so many more things to be grateful for than we can ever, ever imagine if we but pay attention. Remember, gratitude, it is an antidote. It's the ultimate booster shot if you want to operate in a world filled with conflict and division. Number three, listen in order to understand others. Listen in order to understand others. I didn't say in order to convince others, persuade others, get people to do things. I said to understand others. Understand. It means to stand under, to be humble toward the other. Listen to this. Listening is probably the most significant act of hospitality for human beings. Listening. If you want to be hospitable towards someone, listen to them. Listen to their story. Don't judge it. Don't critique it. Don't try to stop them to say, well, why didn't you do this or why don't you do that or what's wrong with you? Just listen. Stand under them. Stand under them. Learn about their life, their story. We're all stories. We're all walking, talking parables. Every one of us is a parable. Our lives speak of lessons that we learned or didn't learn. To listen to someone, what a gift that is. I define human communication as sharing understanding. What do we do when we communicate? We come to the point where we share understanding. Not agreement. We don't have to agree, but we have to mutually understand. Now, we can set another goal of agreement. Let's say, let's move toward that, but that is not required for there to be human communication. And it's often very difficult. And anything that people have strong feelings about, persuasion is very difficult. You know, I have friends that are politically very active and committed, Democrats or Republicans or whatever. And they say to me, well, how can I persuade members of my family to join me in our political movement, whatever it is? And I said, don't. Said, what do you mean, don't? They don't see the light. Oh, okay. What light do they see? Well, I don't know. Well, listen to them. Find out about their life story. Find out how they came to feel the way they do about things. What might happen there is that you come to appreciate them, to love them. And you can accept the difference because there's an underlying common humanity. We live at a time when everybody wants to talk about being part of this group or that group. Identity groups. What's your identity? How do you identify? What do you call yourself? Including attaching Christian to various political movements. So I just started saying, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. That was more neutral. It's honest. It's direct. All of us, all the time, are in situations where we have the opportunity to listen to people we agree with or disagree with, to people who have had very different life experiences. And you honor them when you listen to them. You don't have to agree. You honor by listening, by understanding the humility. Humility, Christ's virtue, right? Christ humbled himself, we know, humbled himself, came down from heaven. It's humility, down to the humus, the earth. That's where humility comes from, the dirt, the earth, the humus. And listening is an act of humility that honors other people. And it's a huge part of hospitality. Today, we tend to think of hospitality as, well, I'm staying at the Hyatt. That's hospitality, the hospitality industry. Well, nobody listens to me there when I walk in. They don't want to hear my story. It's not that kind of hospitality. It's a place to sleep, maybe to get some food. We tend to think of hospitality as having someone over, perhaps, to have a meal with them. And that's good. But what's going to happen then? Share your stories, your life events. What has given you joy, sadness in life? That's where the hospitality really comes in. It settles in and it transforms relationships. I have very close friends that I disagree with vehemently on political issues. Let's fight, you know. We don't, but we get together regularly for coffee. And we talk it out and we laugh at our own silliness about thinking that we have all the political answers to fix the world. And we go back out to our car and realize that we accidentally locked the keys in the car. Big gap between what we think we can accomplish and the way our lives go. I want to try to wrap up this business of listening with some very deep, ancient, biblical wisdom. We all tend to act in each situation as a fool or a wise person. Not only is it gratitude and ingratitude, but it's wisdom and foolishness that we're in between. And the most interesting thing about the ancient Hebrew wisdom about this, which carries through in the New Testament, but it's not quite as obvious, is that a fool is a person who acts, including speaks, without first listening. The fool is a person who thinks they know it all. They don't have to listen or read, pay any attention to what's going on in the world around them. They're in it for themselves, to write, to text, to speak, to use nonverbals in some way, because they see things in terms of their own limited view of reality. They're fools. They get into trouble because what they think about the way things are in the world around them, including their relationships, not the way things are. They're fools. The wise person is the person who listens. Now, let me say again about listening. It's not just listening with ears. It's paying attention to reality. In fact, the most direct way I can put it to you, for the Old Testament, listening is becoming intimate with reality, the way things really are. It's a form of intimacy. Marketing as a field is based on the ancient idea of listening, trying to figure out what reality is out there, doing a survey, whatever it is. Research is that way. The things we do as human beings to try to find out what reality is, all of those constitute what in the Hebrew sense is becoming intimate with reality. And the word for that is yada, Y-A-D-A, with an accent on the second A, Y-A-D-A, yada, yada. That means to become intimate with reality. It's used as a sign of wisdom. The people who become the farmer who really understands how to grow crops or cattle, or the person who knows their spouse so deeply and intimately that he or she can love them deeply. Yada is often used to refer to sexual relations, because again, that's intimacy, intimate knowing. In the Old Testament, when it will say so-and-so knew so-and-so, it's usually yada. And so all of us go through life either paying attention to reality and becoming wise, so that when we then speak or write or text, we're approaching the way things really are, not the way we think that they are, or we're being fools. And what we see in the world today, this world of great conflict and division, is fools battling fools. Fools arguing with fools. If you don't believe me, just turn on cable TV news channels at night. People who know very little about anything they're talking about, and they have to keep another person after another person, all these experts they hire, most of whom are fools, but they need to have somebody to say something because they've got a lot of time to fill. And then you get two people, neither of whom knows much about what they're talking about, and they're having a great argument, putting each other down. It's good for ratings. It's conflict. It's good for ratings, but it's not necessarily good for us. So we should be quick to listen and slow to speak, slow to become angry. What wisdom in that. Years ago, I was living in Iowa, and I was driving home along University Boulevard. I was going to see my mother, paranoid schizophrenic, who was extremely combative. She would battle me on words, sometimes physically, but mostly words, about almost anything. It seemed like she would just disagree with anything I said about anything. And it was so difficult to deal with her. And so I'm driving along, and I pull into her place, I knock on the door, and she opens it just a little bit because she's real paranoid about who it is. And she takes the chain off the hook, and I go in and sit down with her. Now, here's the thing. When I was driving along that road, Boulevard, that University Boulevard, to go see her, a thought came to me. Ask her about what it was like growing up in the Great Depression. We sat down together at her little table, and I asked her that, and she started opening up and talking about a huge section of the reality of her life and her family taking in these girls that were not her sisters because the other parents couldn't afford to feed them and all, and how her parents loved the girls that they took in more than they loved her. And she went on and on about this. And she started crying. And then I started crying. And I'm thinking, this is my mother. And somehow I've tapped into reality. And I've tapped into a deep reality that has to do with something in her psyche that's part of her life. I realized after that event with her that for the first time in my life, I was starting to empathize with my own mother. More than that, I was starting to love my own mother, who I always hated. Now, I believe God gave me that question to ask on that road driving there. I can't explain it any other way. The power of listening to others. So we go on in life, you and I, in the midst of all the conflict and division out there, putting our feet in our mouths or our cell phones in our mouths or our keyboards in our mouths, making all kinds of mistakes, getting into trouble, partly because we don't listen well. Listening is hard because we will hear things that we don't like, we don't agree with, and in some cases that we simply do not want to know. But it also opens us up to reality, to the bigger world that God is managing well in spite of us. I conclude with this story. Because I grew up in a difficult situation, I did not have good interpersonal social skills. That's an understatement. I was really bad interpersonally. And I met this woman at a church event an evening worship service who was coming in from out of town. She was with another woman. The two of them were there. I met them both. And I thought to myself, wow, that one interests me. She said she had been in town for an interview and might be coming back. If she got a job, she was going to move there. I thought, that was good. Let's make it happen. So I forgot about it. And a few months later, lo and behold, who shows up at church but the woman of the two that I was interested in? I said, wow, maybe this is a God thing. And a few weeks later, there was a volleyball game sponsored by the church. And I went to it, and she was there. And the whole time, I'm fouling up the shots because I'm thinking, do I have the courage to ask this woman out? Probably not. But I got to do it. I mean, what kind of man am I? I can't even ask a woman out. Oh, boy. I'm thinking about it. There was a break between sets, and she was standing between a couple of the courts. And I went over to her, and I said, excuse me, my name is Quinn. I met you when you were visiting with a friend a few months ago. And she kind of said, well, yeah, I think I remember you. Of course, she didn't. Very non-memorable guy. And I said, what I remember about you is the yellow dress and your lovely legs. And she smiled and said to me, that was my friend. Now, that woman that I seemingly offended became my wife. You see why I'm a Calvinist. There's this muck all around us, brokenness, conflict, division, people getting upset with other people and all. And here I come and make a complete fool of myself in so many ways with that. I mean, we won't even go into all, you know. That was so stupid, it's beyond belief. And she then agrees to go out with me and becomes a wife that helped transform my life for good. God is there in the midst of all the conflict and division.